Welcome to the Product Development Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Wakeling, a product manager passionate about enriching my own understanding of how great products are made. In this episode, I speak with Raphaël Machonc, CEO and founder of Modeling Evolution, a company focused on innovative collaboration techniques in software development. An often overlooked aspect of successful product development is the intersection of discovery and delivery. And today, we'll be exploring how using event storming and event modeling techniques can help drive better collaboration between teams that often have very different perspectives within a business. Raphaël, welcome to the podcast. Many thanks for joining us.
Welcome, everybody. Nice that you have me here.
Before we start talking more deeply about the modeling techniques, I'm keen to get your idea of, you know, what are the key challenges that arise in terms of fostering collaboration between product managers, UX designers, and the engineering team in the software development process.
Awesome. That's a great question. First, it's essential so that everybody can understand everybody. So when people hand off information, their concepts, there need to be some kind of way that fosters communication and fosters exchange of knowledge. So modeling techniques are the ones that can put everybody on the same page. And it's not only to the, discovery phase or delivery phase. They can play a significant role in all the phases. So, for instance, they can put the whole team on the same page in regards to business processes. And when you have like a huge corporate, let's say, and there are many departments, event storming is a great workshop that can help with that. So when it comes to collaboration, this is wonderful thing. Another thing that you can get out of the modeling techniques is that you can take out the work from someone and then put it into your kind of specific context. So as you mentioned, there are like product managers, UX designers, and engineers, and they can communicate through stories. So for instance, through the event storming, but later on they would take their work from it and then they apply their own specific modeling techniques that are specific for their jobs, right? Everybody is an expert in their field, right? So those kind of transitions between modeling techniques is a little bit unique, but it can streamline software development in general, yeah.
So from your perspective, obviously you touched on a few things there. Event storming, I'm keen to get a bit more information on. We can kind of define that a bit more for people in terms of what that looks like.
Sure, of course. Event storming was created by Alberto Brandolini from Italy a few years ago. And it was a modeling technique to make so that the engineers can understand the business. So how to talk with business and get the requirements in the quickest possible way. How to make it so that the collaboration, the knowledge exchange is quick and we don't have a waste in the meeting. And so we have today, I think, three types of event storming sessions, workshops that are pretty common. One of them is big picture event storming. This is a strategic workshop where we have usually stakeholders, business owners in terms of business process. So someone who is in charge of business processes and can change it, but also engineers. And this workshop aims to optimize business processes. So it's a discovery workshop. And the huge outcome that we have after it is we will see how much kind of work we would plan to do otherwise. Essentially, event storming uses one awesome building block, which is an event. It's something that happened in the past. A workshop itself more or less looks like let's take all the people together in a room. They will gather in front of the wall and we will try to describe our business processes through events that happened in the past. So just basically by telling us stories, what happened and so on and so forth, and we'll put those sticky notes on the wall. And the power of the event storming lies in the simplicity, because everybody can contribute to that. Everybody can put a box on the board or on a sticky note and ask questions. Questioning is something unique. Like, you don't need to know what kind of things to question. When you see the sticky note on a wall, those questions just arrive naturally. Like, what happened before? Why it happened? Who did it? What happens afterwards? Why it happened? So as soon as you can see the sticky note with an event, those questions are just almost scripted. And then you can discover opportunities in the process and how to optimize it and so on and so forth. So after the event storming session, you will see that, okay, we've got this kind of processes that looks like that. We have thrown to the dustbin lots of sticky notes, and those are the essentially something that we were supposed to implement, but we didn't implement. So this is our saver. And we also see like lots of hotspots. So those are the sticky notes that contains information about assumptions, risk, or something. So we can see, you know, places where they need to require some more research. This is like the big picture event storming strategic one. After that, it depends on the company, but we can execute the process level event storming. And the process level event storming is more focused on the processes and how information systems interact with each other in different departments. So if you have 20 teams in a company and you don't know how the process flows throughout those departments and how the interaction between those departments looks like, then the process level event storming can answer these questions. It's like a tactics to the strategy. And then once we have this event storming process level, now it becomes a little bit more complicated, because in Europe, people tend to switch to the design level event storming. This is primarily for engineers, and actually for engineers only, because there is technical jargon on the workshop. However, in Canada, Adam Dimitruk has created something which is called event modeling. And the event modeling doesn't have the technical jargon, and it allows us to model the information system through the examples without technical jargon, to put it again. So we can have a workshop with a product manager, UX designer, tech lead together, and design the system that has all the parts for all of the roles. What I mean by that is that we've got the things that are interesting, important from product manager standpoint of view. Same goes for UX designer, and same goes for engineer. And we will get the event modeling done after it. We know exactly how the system should look like and how it behaves. Through the workshop, you will get four risks. Certainly feasibility risk. So from the engineering standpoint of view, you will straight away get this kind of benefit. As well, you can ask the questions regarding usability. So for UX designer, and we can have some questions for the customer value and business viability as well. But those require a little bit more pre-work even before event storming. So this is basically all, and you can streamline software development to have it almost it scripted in some kind of way, because the workshops are designed in such a way to foster questioning, asking questions, and transfer knowledge. So finally, you can have a product team that can work together, and the source of innovation comes from all of those three roles, so UX, product people, and engineers.
So in terms of the actual events then, maybe can you provide some examples of what they may actually look like? Obviously, all the little sticky notes on the wall. Maybe you can give some examples to people to help kind of visualize what sort of things people will be talking about.
Sure, of course. So suppose that we can have like, let's imagine that we want to buy a ticket in a cinema, right? And we want to do it online. So a sticky note might have been something like cinema searched, and then the movie was selected, then time was selected, then the seat was selected or maybe reserved. You don't know, right? Not yet, at least. But when you place it on a board, you can get those kind of questions. Then purchase made, right? And so on and so forth. So those are the events. Now, let's say we have like a event ticket was sent. You can go backwards and have like a reverse narration and ask, what must have happened before the ticket was sent? Why we send the ticket? What should have happened before? How do we know that we send the ticket? And then you might discover, we need a confirmation from PayPal or from Stripe. So in this way, going backwards and asking questions, you can discover and lower the risk of uncertainty, right? So you will know the things that typically you wouldn't ask because you didn't have a systematic way of asking the questions on every stage of the process. And so you basically drop down significantly the risk of this uncertainty. And the second thing is that you've got all the team members on the team just right now figuring out how to optimize your business process. So it's also worth noting that before you execute the event storming, it's good to have like a homework, like what is the goal? What kind of impacts do we want to have? How would we measure the impacts? So we very often do something which is called impact mapping, designed by Gojko Adzic on the shoulders of Tom Gilb. And when we define the impacts and have the metrics, then we can as well focus the team in the event storming session on which they, like to which direction they should optimize the process. And all right, maybe we want to have more engagement. Maybe we want to have more sales. How can we do that, right? Look at the process right now. This process looks like this. How can we alter the process so that to optimize in this direction? And as well, how from the process would you figure it out how to measure the success? What are the, you know, metrics that can measure your success? And then when we do it in the beginning, even in the event storming, this will propagate later on through event storming process level and then event modeling up to the point where the team understands, hey, this really matters. Like, we want to have some kind of impact on people. And when the user clicks here, here, here many, many times, we'll know that we succeeded or not. So these are the beginnings of understanding the insights that are required and so important from product managers, because we can build it in and put the whole team together to understand how important they are and how to get this information even before we get into the implementation. This needs to be measured somehow because we want to understand whether we succeed or not, right? We want to be data-driven, of course.
In terms of the process for doing that event storming, it sounds like there is a certain crossover between that and maybe customer journey mapping as a kind of separate thing. I mean, what are the fundamental differences between customer journey mapping and event storming?
Yeah, sure. So actually, the customer journey mapping is something that we do out of the event storming. So I think about modeling techniques are some kind of maps, and you want to switch a map from one to another. And the transitions are very often very easy. So when you have event storming, you can switch to the customer journey maps and then ask questions for that. Same goes if you have event modeling, you can switch to the customer journey map. And while you design your app, you can have extended notation taken from the customer journey map, put it down into the event modeling, and then you can go step by step in every single step of the, you know, process. By example, you can ask a question, okay, what's the feeling? What are the pain points, right? So you can focus the team not only on the design, or how the information is going to be processed under the hood, but also from the user experience points of view. The thing is that everybody on the team, in order for implementing those, everybody on the team needs to have some kind of benefit out of it. And this is the thing, like if I hear about customer journey, you will find out that, you know, people did customer journey, right? They have the map, they implement it. And what then afterwards? Does it live or it doesn't, right? Same goes with event storming. Does it live afterwards? And the very often the question is, maybe not. Maybe I will do it like in a, you know, in a quarter or something, or in a half a year, depending on the modeling technique. And what we could do is we could have a common modeling techniques that live just like a living documentation. It's a mean for communication. It's always up to date. and we can always look at it and derive our own specific modeling context out of it. So for this purpose, event storming and event modeling are to me the best candidates, because from there I can go to a customer journey when I'm like a UX right person, or I can go to user story mapping, right? And there's another thing, like we need to communicate in most simple way between people, right? And the event seems the key here. Everybody understand the concept of a fact that happened in the past, because this is just our episodic memory. Like we communicate through stories. So when we visualize the story with those kind of boxes on the board or on the virtual board or in the room next to a wall, doesn't matter. But when we visualize it, we can think, ask questions, and this is the power of it.
In terms of iterating and iterations in product development, what is a good frequency to think about in terms of doing this process?
So it depends on the, of course, modeling technique. So the big picture, once a quarter, once a half a year, right? Because this is like, first of all, it's hard to execute because you need to invite the decision makers, and it's hard to do sometimes. But anyhow, like once a quarter, once a half a year, when we want to optimize the business processes, then goes the process level, which would be a little bit more frequent, but I don't know, once a month, maybe, when we want to align the teams between different departments together. And then goes the event modeling. And we actually incorporated event modeling in Scrum. So wherever there is the planning, where's the grooming, where's the review, we've got event modeling on that. It's almost as if the modeling technique facilitates the meeting, except the purpose of the meetings are a little bit different. But we can get everything out of the event modeling session. So when we are doing the grooming, we can assert all the risks in the event modeling. When we have the planning, we can visually see, okay, this part of the story we will deliver, or maybe this part of the story we want to fake somehow or have another experiment about it. So I don't need to remember stories in Jira with their numbers. I have it just in front of my eyes. I can see a movie that shows how our app is going to be used. And this is event modeling, essentially. So maybe to give a glance about the event modeling, how the event modeling is different from the event storming. So event modeling has four building blocks, essential building blocks. One is the event, same almost as the event from the event storming, but we've got the intentions or comments, and we've got the views or reports or conclusions. This is basically the same block. And those are the blocks that we put in the virtual board, and they carry information. And on the top, we've got a user interface. So imagine that you want to describe an information system. Let's say we want to play chess, right? So on the top, you will have a screenshot by example. We want to describe it by example, right? So on the top, you will have a chessboard, right? User interface, a chessboard. And then someone wants to move a pawn from one point to another point, right? And this is like Jane, for instance, right? And she's doing this move. We know exactly what kind of move it is, right? So this is her intention. We put it into the box. And we see that this is like from E6 to E7, whatever. And then, okay, and the system is saying, okay, this move is possible. It's not against the rules. You can do that. And then the system memorized it as a fact that's in the orange box, that she just moved a pawn from this point to another point. Now, when this happened, we can say, all right, so the user interface, who is interested in this information? This is a question. And then the answer would be, all right, the user interface, because we've got the chessboard. But maybe we need to show it on some kind of reports. Maybe we've got a dashboard somewhere. Maybe we've got some kind of statistics somewhere else, right? So you would hook up this kind of fact that happened in the past to some kind of views, reports, in different systems or in this system, and it carries on, right? So somebody else makes a move and so on and so forth, right? So we've got a movie by example with exact data, and this is almost like a running prototype, except we haven't implemented, right? We've got the user interface, so people will visually understand what happens, but also we have the information that is going to be processed under the hood. So this is another thing. And we, from there on, we can have different contexts based on different team members. So for instance, let's pick up engineers right now. Engineers would do a feasibility check. They can ask a question, from where do you know this information? And very quickly, they can find out that something can be implemented or cannot be implemented. So they will do the feasibility check through event modeling. Now, UX people, on the other hand, could ask a question, all right, in this stage of the process, what are the pain points? What are the feelings? What are the opportunities? Now, the product managers, on the other hand, could ask a question like, how do we know that this kind of story is successful? What kind of insights can we get here? Like, what kind of impact do we want to have in this particular story through those particular steps, right? How would I know that a person have succeeded in buying a ticket in a cinema or something, right? Give me some statistics from the funnel, right? Straight away, out of this kind of event modeling session, everybody can get something. And this is the key, because this kind of workshop can be handed over to the delivery phase. So this basically event modeling acts a transition between the discovery to the delivery. And event modeling plays a significant role for later on the engineers. So they can get it basically, and they've got like a full specification. They almost don't need to think about other things in terms of technology. They just need to implement it. They've got everything what they need in order to get precise specification. And I'm not sure if it was yesterday or the day before, but I've read on the Twitter that there was a question like, what's the waste, right, in the software development? And this question was for the engineers. And the answer was, well, I waste time to understand the requirements. Yeah, so through this kind of workshops, they won't because they've got the requirements. And what, as a product manager, you could get as well is you can get the engineers you can bring them to the table because you can focus them on the things that matter. So through the workshop, they will find out that their job is not just to code yet another feature, yet another form, yet another, you know, update, but they really want to have the impact on the users. And it's explicit on the workshop. Mm-hmm. We just have a box for the impacts. You know, you will implement this. We want to have this impact. We'll measure the impact through this kind of stuff. And we'll show it over here, right? So in this way, you can bring the whole team together to find solutions and tackle hard problems.
You mentioned a movie a couple of times. To be clear, when you say movie, what are we talking about? Is that a literal kind of visual combination of all the screenshots? Is it a kind of storyboard visual? You know, what is that?
All right. So when you have an app, when you have some kind of system, right, you've got the user interface, right? And you can like create the frames of this usage of the system, like we want to see the list of the movies and we want to click like select a movie, a button, right? So this is like one frame of a movie. Then this is just like a screenshot, a mock-up, a wireframe. Basically, you need to have it visualized. And then when you have this one, you can look at it from the accountant standpoint of view. Let's come back 100 years ago and there is a chess tournament, right? And there is an accountant just, you know, sitting next to a game that is being, you know, executed, is being played, right? What kind of information he would input in his book, in his ledger? through this kind of analogy, I'm just like trying to describe how is it to execute the event modeling session. It's very easy. You don't have technical jargon. We just have the intention. We want to do something or a command. And we want a fact that happened in the past. And it carries some information, just as if you would describe this kind of information 100 years ago. What's so profound about that? It is so simple, but later on, engineers can take it and it translates almost effortlessly into the source code. It's complete. Of course, there are some, you know, details that are required to be asked, right? Like when to do it, like what should have happened in the past to make this kind of operation possible, or what shouldn't have happened in the past. So there are many questions that you can ask when you have it visualized. And then those questions are asked almost like in a process. Like you can ask them in a scripted way. And through questioning, you drop down significantly the risk of, feasibility, usability, customer value, and, you know, business viability just by asking systematic questions on each every single step in the process.
In terms of who owns this whole process, this series of processes, is it the product manager? Is it the tech lead? You know, who kind of owns this process and really brings it together and organizes everything? From your perspective, where is that best placed?
Oh, this is a very hard question. It depends, of course. But, the Scrum Master, I think, is the first one who can do that. But it depends how we want to execute it. If we have like a product team that works for a company that creates product, right? Then the Scrum Master can do that. If not a Scrum Master, then I suppose that the tech lead, when it comes to some of the workshops, you know, when we switch back to particular context, then we would switch back to the UX people or to the product managers. So it depends. For instance, you know, the big picture event storming product managers, if they know this technique, they can certainly use it. Once the team learns it, you don't need a person in a product team who will, you know, be the facilitator anymore, because the team itself will just collaborate together to work it out. If you want to conduct event storming, I would even say, all right, just try it, especially the on-site version, so in person. Just try it and you will see for yourself. Not too much preparations, and it just works like magic. When it comes to the remote version of event storming and event modeling, this requires a little bit of facilitation, so it's a little bit harder. But there are many workshops around the world, and you can try it on your own and check it out. And having one or two workshops will allow you to later on use it at your only daily basis.
Some of the difficulties that people might face when trying to implement some of these processes and techniques, from your perspective, what are some of the challenges involved in implementation of this?
So there are the challenges just because of the technology. The event storming, for instance, the big picture one, has a drawback of executing it in a remote fashion. So you basically have a limit to maybe 7 people, and you know, if you have more on the meeting, then simply it won't work because you cannot have parallel discussions. When you have event storming that's executed on the site, so, you know, in a room full of people, there's the magic will happen almost automatically. People will gather in small groups, you know, 3-4 people, and they will work on their stuff, and everything will be just fine. But the remote facilitation might have some trouble. Another thing is, especially in the beginning, there should be a person who encourages in questioning, because without questioning, you won't get the value. We executed, you know, lots of those kind of modeling sessions. It's unbelievable that after some time, if you have well-motivated team to do their job, the whole story just pops up in real time almost. You know, like you are talking with someone, right? And the story, the team is working collaboratively on the board, on the virtual box, and basically the story just pops up and all the questions just pop up instantly. Yeah, and this is great.
So in terms of modeling evolution then, how are companies working with you directly to facilitate all these processes?
Yeah, so basically there are two things. One are the trainings and modeling workshops, so we can have those. But as well, we've got just clients where we can deliver some products, and we can do things that really matter, because we can visualize what matters. We can understand the impact better because we do it in a systematic way. And recently, we delivered a project with IoT devices. Now, you know, the IoT is like, you know, hardware plus software for the industry. And easily this one as well could be visualized through those kind of modeling techniques. And this gives us an advantage because, like, before committing to implement or, you know, to build hardware, which is expensive, of course, right? We can describe it through this kind of movie, right? By examples, and the client can very easily understand whether it will suit their needs or not. So we can assert almost in every single stage of the process whether they want it or they don't want to have it. So before implementation, before building, we can validate it in many, many, many ways, dropping the risk significantly.
So in terms of modeling evolution as well, obviously you're the CEO and founder. So you've gone through the process of working out what the product should look like and what you're doing. I mean, what have you learned in that process? What kind of lessons can you share with others maybe on that side of things?
So there are some painful lessons, of course, and some less painful lessons learned. There are two ways of how to build a startup, which is like a fundraise or to bootstrap. And if you can the bootstrap, I would do the bootstrap rather than the fundraising. Of course, it depends, but if you can, then why not to have it like that? Then you have more motivated people on the board. Another thing is as well MVPs and how to validate your assumptions. In the beginning, some years ago, I figured out that, hey, maybe we want to have like something that will generate the code for us based on the specification. And then it turned out that it didn't work very well because it was just our own way of thinking. Other teams didn't want to use it like that. So we built something which people didn't want to use it, basically. So this was like a hard lesson learned. Yeah, but you know, you fall and then you rise again. Today I can say that, you know, once you have the specification, each technical team delivers it in through their conventions. They've got different, you know, ways of working. And when you adapt to that, then you have it. You've got it, right? So basically what we did right now, we built some tools for IDEs that foster specific teams' conventions and how they do the coding rather than code on behalf of them. They will just use their tools and their conventions so that to streamline the development.
So in terms of that, building maybe the wrong thing, what changed since then in terms of not making that mistake again, I suppose?
Few things was learned out of it. Like the first thing is that instead of thinking about the precise product that we want to build for someone, we want to, of course, validate our assumptions. But also once we know that something could work or have some kind of clues that, you know, something can work, if we implement it, instead of implementing it as a specific feature, maybe let's think about a platform that can, on which you can run experiments. So when I think about the products, when we build the products, I think about how to build those little tiny blocks, Lego blocks, that when you have yet another Lego block, you can build different things. So you are building essentially platform for the experimentation to happen on the top of it. And you know, as a product manager, as a product person, like I can say, okay, this idea might work, but it might as well not work. some kind of ideas just won't work, right? You know, I will run the experiment and it might be so that even it might be implemented and then it turned out that it doesn't work well. So when you build a platform, you anyhow, even from the failure, you are gaining something. Instead of, you know, just ripping it apart and just throwing to the dustbin, how to make it so internally that you can anyhow gain something out of the failure, right? So this was something, lesson learned a little bit, how to build something in great uncertainty, because like we are on the edge, we are building the platform that is totally new, totally fresh. I cannot compare it to any other platform. Maybe today some of it I can, but at the time when it was being built, I couldn't. So if you think about it this way, like, hey, why not to have like a platform where it allows me to experiment a lot. It allows for my validation experiments to be easily done. And then if I can make it this way in a cheap way, then great. I can launch easily a product.
I think some great takeaways there. Just to wrap things up then, if there's something that you'd like to really convey to people in terms of looking at event storming, event modeling, you know, what's one thing to really that people should take away from this podcast and think about when they want to maybe go down this route and see what value they can get from these sort of processes and frameworks?
I would think that it's amazing how people can work together and how could they be empowered when working together. And communication is almost seamless, like it works without any trouble. And they can work something. There's the innovation, it sparks, and everybody feels like being on the same team, because the communication is just like a king here. So those kind of techniques, event storming, event modeling, allows us to have great product teams communicate very easily, and then hand off the work in the context where we want it to be. So in context of a product manager, in context of a UX designer, in context of an engineer, everybody can have something out of it, a great value. And in this way, we don't waste time on documentation. I think that no one really wants to waste time on documentation or reading long Jira user stories and then resolving the problems. I've got the question to this user story. I've got the question to other user story. Why to have it? Let's foster just natural communication and those kind of modeling techniques. With them, you can have it.
Great point to finish on. Rafael, thanks so much for joining the podcast. It's been fascinating. And hopefully some of the listeners will, you know, think about implementing this sort of thing into their business. And if anyone does, I'm keen to hear from them as well. So yeah, thank you again for joining.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam, for having me.
You've been listening to the Products Development Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your colleagues and follow on your preferred podcast platform and leave a review. It's really appreciated and helps grow the podcast into the future. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.